Welcome back to Clown Cast. I'm going to open this one with a question. You remember two episodes ago, we did that whole thing about how nature runs quality assurance, evolution as the ultimate testing suite.
Yeah, the biomimicry episode. Engineers copying shark skin and gecko feet and stuff.
Nature spent billions of years debugging solutions.
Right. And then the last episode, we talked about how Western culture isn't actually the default. It's one very specific build that just happens to dominate psychology research.
The weird episode.
Western educated, industrialized, rich, democratic.
96% of psychology studies sampling from, like, 5% of humanity.
So here's the bridge. What if I told you that human cultures are running the exact same QA process as nature, just on a faster clock? That your grandmother's weird food rules, the prayer rituals you grew up with, the Finnish concept of grit that doesn't translate into English, all of that is battle-tested code that survived thousands of years of selection pressure.
Okay, so you're saying cultures are evolving, like biologically?
Culturally. And this isn't me speculating. There is a whole academic field called cultural evolution. Joseph Henrich at Harvard wrote this book, The Secret of Our Success. And his argument is that humanity's real superpower isn't individual intelligence. It's our collective brains, our ability to socially learn things, accumulate knowledge across generations, and transmit it. Cultural practices undergo selection pressure just like biological traits. The ones that help groups survive tend to stick around. The ones that don't, they disappear, usually along with the cultures that held them.
That's dark, but it makes sense.
It's like, okay, you know, in D&D how every race has passive abilities.
Like, dwarves get poison resistance and dark vision, elves get perception bonuses and trance instead of sleep.
Yes, go with that.
You didn't choose those traits. You probably didn't even read the full tooltip when you pick your race.
But every single roll you make, those passes are quietly modifying the outcome. That's what you're describing.
Cultural practices are racial traits. You inherit them at character creation, meaning birth, and they buff you in ways you might never consciously notice.
That's exactly it. And here's where it gets wild. Let me give you the Fiji example, because this one broke my brain. In Fiji, pregnant and breastfeeding women follow these fish taboos. Specific species they're not allowed to eat. And from the outside, it looks like pure superstition, right? Old wives' tale stuff.
Yeah, don't eat the spotted fish or the spirits will curse your baby, that kind of thing.
So the Royal Society, not exactly a superstition fan club, they studied these taboos. And what they found is that the taboo species map almost perfectly onto the most toxic marine species in Fijian waters. Following the taboo reduces fish poisoning risk by 30% during pregnancy and 60% during breastfeeding.
Wait, nobody designed that.
Nobody designed it. No Fijian scientist ran a toxicology study. What happened is, over generations, women who happened to avoid those fish had healthier babies. Those babies survived. Those families passed on the practice. The taboo spread because it worked. It's a passive ability, plus due to constitution during pregnancy. The tooltip says the spirits demand it, but the actual mechanic is toxin avoidance.
So the flavor text is superstition, but the underlying stat block is real science.
That's incredible,
and also kind of terrifying. Because it means there could be practices we're throwing away right now that have hidden stats we haven't read yet.
Bingo. And that brings me to the second metaphor I want to use today, which is maybe the most important one. Think of cultural practices as Jenga blocks, or load-bearing walls, if you're more of a Minecraft person. Some blocks look decorative. They look like they're not doing anything structural. But pull one out, and the whole tower starts wobbling.
Oh no! You have an example of someone pulling out a Jenga block, don't you?
Okinawa, Japan, one of the 5 blue zones. Regions with extraordinary concentrations of people living past 100. Okinawans had this practice called harahachibu, which basically means eat until you're 80% full. They had planned forward diets, strong intergenerational social networks, daily low-intensity movement, not exercise, just walking and gardening, built-in stress reduction, through prayer and social hours. And they had centenarians everywhere. And, in the 21st century, younger Okinawans adopted Western diets. Fast food moved in. The traditional practices started fading, and Okinawan longevity has measurably declined. They pulled out the Jenga block. The tower wobbled.
That's like deleting legacy code because you don't understand what it does.
We talked about this, remember, Inherited Problems, episode 142. Sometimes what you inherit is debt,
but sometimes it's load-bearing infrastructure disguised as clutter.
Exactly. And this is the tension at the heart of the whole episode. You inherit this codebase from previous generations. Some of it's beautifully optimized, some of it's a mess, and you can't always tell which is which until you start removing things.
So how do you tell the difference? Like, is there a way to audit the cultural codebase?
Well, one clue is convergent evolution, and this is where I want to bring in the Pokémon metaphor, because I think it's the cleanest way to explain this. You know how in Pokémon, Vulpix exists as a fire type in Kanto and an ice type in Alola. Same creature, same functional niche, completely different environmental expression.
Regional forms.
Yeah, like Alola Marowak is fire ghost instead of ground type. Same base Pokémon, different biome, different adaptation.
Cultural evolution does the same thing. Take fermented foods. Nearly every culture on Earth independently developed fermentation. Korea has kimchi. Germany has sauerkraut. Japan has miso. Ethiopia has injera. Eastern Europe has kefir. These cultures had zero contact with each other in many cases. They arrived at the same solution independently.
Because the underlying problem was the same. Food preservation, gut health, nutrient absorption.
Right. Nobody understood gut microbiome science. Nobody knew about probiotics. But cultures that fermented food had better health outcomes, better food storage, better survival rates. The practice persisted because it worked. It's convergent cultural evolution. Different regional forms of the same functional adaptation.
So if you see the same practice showing up independently in like a dozen unrelated cultures, that's a strong signal that it's low bearing. It's not arbitrary, it's solved a real problem.
That's a great heuristic, actually. And it holds up. Collective rituals are another example. Religious services, communal meals, dance ceremonies. Every culture has some version of get together and do a synchronized thing. Research in the Journal of Happiness Studies found that these rituals trigger oxytocin release, which enhances trust and social bonding. And here's the kicker. Even arbitrary rituals work. Researchers literally invented fake rituals for experiments, and participants still showed reduced anxiety and better emotional regulation.
Wait, so you could just make up a ritual and it would work?
The mechanism doesn't care about the content, it cares about the synchrony. Doing something together, in rhythm, with shared intent. That's the active ingredient. The specific prayers or psalms or dances are the flavor text. The oxytocin is the stat block.
Okay, so we've got hidden passive buffs from food taboos, convergence, evolution, and fermentation, and rituals as oxytocin triggers.
This is all making me feel like we should just, you know, never change anything ever, which can't be right.
It's not, and this is where it gets complicated, because cultural QA also preserves harmful practices through the exact same mechanism. Honor killings, caste systems, female genital cutting, these are all battle-tested in the narrow sense that they persisted for centuries. But they persisted because they served power structures, not population health.
So the selection pressure isn't always what makes people healthy and happy.
No, remember, nature's QA optimizes for survival and reproduction. Not for individual flourishing. Cultural QA does the same thing. A practice can be adapted for the group, meaning it helps the group outcompete neighbors, while being absolutely brutal to individuals within it. This is the Farmackan problem we talked about in episode 146. The same tradition can be medicine or poison depending on context.
So the inherited gear from your ancestors, some of it's a legendary sword, and some of it's cursed equipment that drains your HP.
And you're wearing all of it. And you might not be able to tell which is which because you've been wearing it since birth. It all just feels normal. Which is literally what last episode was about.
Okay, so I want to go back to something. You mentioned these different cultural concepts for well-being, like specific words that cultures have for states of being.
That seems relevant here.
Super relevant. Because if a culture has a word for something, specific, untranslatable word, that means the concept mattered enough to survive linguistic selection. It's a named ability on the character sheet. So Denmark has hygge, which is this feeling of cozy, simple shared pleasures. It triggers dopamine and serotonin. It correlates with winter mental health resilience, which, you know, matters when you live somewhere dark for half the year.
That's like a cold resistance passive.
Plus due to mental fortitude in winter biomass.
Finland has sisu. It's this concept of grit, endurance beyond normal limits. It's been studied as a resilience construct, and Finland has been number one in the World Happiness Report 7 years running. Japan has ikigai, sense of life purpose. Longitudinal studies show it correlates with lower dementia risk, fewer functional disabilities, higher life satisfaction. Norway has friluftsliv, open air living, daily nature immersion. Southern Africa has Ubuntu, I am because we are. This communal identity concept that underlies their restorative justice systems.
So every culture min-maxes for its environment.
The Nordic specs into cold weather survival and winter mental health. The Japanese specs into longevity and purpose.
The Southern African specs into communal resilience.
Different procedural seeds, generating different builds. And here's an important caveat. Finland and Denmark's happiness rankings are largely explained by institutional quality, low corruption, social safety nets, universal healthcare. Hygge didn't cause the happiness, but Hygge is part of the same cultural ecosystem that built those institutions. The practices and the institutions co-evolved.
So you can't just import Hygge into, like, Texas and expect Finnish happiness levels.
That's like trying to equip a legendary item without meeting the level requirements.
Exactly. You'd be multiclassing without the prerequisite levels in the base class. You might get some of the surface benefits, but you won't unlock the full power without the supporting infrastructure. And actually, this connects to something really sobering. Remember No Save File, episode 106. We talked about knowledge that dies when people die.
Yeah, languages disappearing, craftspeople taking skills to the grave.
A language dies every 2 weeks, and every one of those languages carries embedded adaptive knowledge, medicinal plant classifications, ecological management strategies, social technologies refined over centuries. That's not just a linguistic loss, that's battle-tested code being deleted with no backup.
We're running RMRF on humanity's cultural repository, and we don't even have version control.
And here's the stat that connects it all back to the weird problem from last episode. 73% of first authors in psychology papers are at American universities. 96% of the people being studied are from weird populations. So not only are we losing cultural code through language death and globalization, we're not even studying the code that still exists. We're running humanity's entire QA suite on one test environment and calling the results universal.
That's like only playtesting your game on PC and then being shocked when it crashes on PlayStation.
And then blaming the PlayStation.
Okay, so where does this leave us? Because I feel like the takeaway can't just be traditions good, change bad.
That's obviously not right either.
No, the takeaway is more nuanced than that. It's, before you remove a practice you don't understand, consider the possibility that it's load-bearing. Do the audit. Look for convergent evolution. Did multiple unrelated cultures arrive at the same solution? Look for the stat block beneath the flavor text. And recognize that some inherited gear is cursed and needs to be unequipped. But do it carefully. Test and staging before you push to production.
I love that.
Cultural change as responsible software deployment.
Don't just YOLO it to prod.
And maybe the most practical takeaway is this. The Hadza people of Tanzania, one of the last hunter-gatherer societies on Earth, work about 4 to 6 hours a day and report high life satisfaction. Their build has been in production for roughly 50,000 years. Meanwhile, we're working 8 to 12 hours a day, eating processed food, skipping sleep, and wondering why we're anxious.
Their code has been running in production for 50,000 years with no major outages, and we looked at it and said, nah, let's write everything from scratch.
And the rewrite has bugs.
The rewrite has so many bugs. Okay, I have one more question.
You mentioned Bhutan measures gross national happiness, like as an actual metric.
Yeah, Bhutan is the only nation that formally treats cultural well-being as a KPI. They measure it across 9 domains. It's basically the only country that put happiness in their monitoring dashboard instead of just tracking GDP.
That's amazing. They're the one team that actually set up proper observability instead of just watching the revenue graph.
And look, I don't want to romanticize any of this. Bhutan has its own issues. The Hadza face existential pressure from land encroachment. Blue zones aren't magic utopias, but the pattern holds. Cultures that maintain their evolved practices tend to show better outcomes on the metrics that matter for actual human lives. And cultures that abandon those practices, like post-Western diet Okinawa, saw those metrics decline.
So the moral of the story is read the tooltip before you and equip the gear, even if it looks outdated.
Especially if it looks outdated.
Especially if it looks outdated, because the things that survived longest usually survived for a reason, and the reason might be invisible until it's gone.
Man, this was heavy.
In a good way. Like I'm gonna go home and think differently about why my grandma always insisted on eating dinner together at the same time every night.
Your grandma was buffing the whole party's oxytocin, and she didn't even know it.
Grandma was a raid leader this whole time. So what's next?
Where do we go from here?
So we've been talking about how cultures evolve these practices organically, right? Over centuries, through selection pressure. But there's this whole other thing happening right now, where people are cherry-picking practices from other cultures. Corporate mindfulness retreats borrowing from Buddhism. Silicon Valley, biohackers importing Japanese bathing rituals. Wellness influencers selling bastardized versions of indigenous medicine ceremonies. And the question is, what happens when you rip a practice out of its cultural context and transplant it? Does it still work? Does it mutate into something else? Is it, you know, cultural strip mining?
Oh, that's spicy. That's like looting abilities from another class's skill tree without understanding the prerequisites.
Exactly. So next time, I think we dive into that. The science of what actually transfers, what breaks in translation, and why your company's Meditation Monday might be missing the point entirely.
I'm extremely here for that. All right, that's the show. Thanks for listening, everyone.
Stay curious, read the tooltips, and for the love of God, don't delete code you don't understand.
Peace.